Got it. Here we go. Bring her in. By the way, Sean, when you were there in the bus and the person was threatening your life,
yeah.
did the horses, did you start to think, God, Lady Treasure and Sir Captain Middlehead, will that, what, who will take care of them? Did that cross your mind?
Of course it crossed my mind. I'm a lover of animals since acquiring my kitty about a year and a half ago. And plus they were in the carrier, the horse carrier behind the bus.
Oh,
and why not just ride the horses to the appointment? Then you can
Jacob, you don't know these things. The
you know
CDC
what?
Says no horse riding at least an hour after an injection.
Hindsight 2020, Jacob. Why don't you just stick with producing?
Yeah, but thank you, Sean. Hate to see you dressed down like that in front of everybody, but let's change the subject. Move the microphone a little closer in. Here comes Teeny Tiny. There she is, right there. And she's with the slushy guy.
Hi, I'm having a tea party, and my guests should be arriving very soon.
We have two spiked lemonades.
Yum!
A slushy and a regular.
I will share it with you.
It just brings everybody together, and that's what Edmunds is all about.
That's what it's all about. Time to get it. Knew that a spiked slushy just brings everyone together. By the way, Evening Magazine used to do every year. Edmonds won friendliest town in the Northwest.
Huh?
Instead of you don't think we are, we're going to kick your ass. All right, the heat wave's on. Heat wave. Nick Allard was talking about it. Going to break some records.
Well, if you go back in our very long history of temperature measurement, we've only hit 100 or higher four times. And so the fact that that's going to happen, and let me throw something else at you.
Uh-oh.
The highest June temperature in Seattle on record is 96. And so Saturday alone, if we just get to 97, and I'm saying just get to 97, then we already have the warmest June temperature ever. And then if we get to triple digits, I went straight 100 on Sunday, then it's only the third time in SEA history and only the fifth time in Seattle history that we've hit 100.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
he went a hundo, Tom, for Sunday. Nick Allard went a hundo. Yeah.
He's just too hip for our show. So, to me.
More examples of how this weekend could be unprecedented.
Okay, sure.
Do you care?
Let's hear. Yeah. Let's play.
All right, here we go.
So if you go back to 2009, that's when we hit 103. And off the top of my head, I think it was 94 that we hit 100 even at SEA, at then SeaTac. So if we were to do it 2 days in a row, that's never happened. If we were to do it 3 days in a row, that's on a different level, which I don't think we will. I don't think Monday will be as hot as Sunday. But Saturday and Sunday both have the chance to do it. You know, again, if you look at the overall picture since the 1890s of keeping records, if you include the federal building, four times you've hit 100, and you could do it potentially twice in the same weekend.
That's
so, yeah, that's highly, highly unusual.
Okay. If I were still doing weather, I would be like, I'm going to go 106 for a Sunday. Why not? Get people talking.
Who's going to? Well, the thing is, I think hitting triple digits in Seattle, as long as I've Seattle, that is a huge deal. I mean, that is like 106. I'm just wondering, for those of us who live in, like, have lived in Eastern Washington, for instance, I mean, 100 is nothing for them, but for, you know, for the city folks, for the Puget Sound area, hitting 100, it's like snowing on Christmas Day. It's just like, it's like this mythical thing that almost never happens.
You know, having grown up in Philadelphia and having worked in Washington, D.C., I remember one time going to work as a weatherman in the morning, and it was like 2:30 in the morning, and I'm listening to the news, and it's WUSA weather, presently 87 degrees. It was 2 in the morning, it was 87. But the thing is, the humidity is what gets you, because it's 100 degrees, but because of the temperatures and because of the amount of moisture in the air, you know how it works. So the moisture shows up on your skin, and then the air allows the moisture to evaporate in your skin, which cools your body. That's how it works. When humidity is high, the air is so saturated, it's like a sponge. It can't absorb any more moisture. So the moisture that's on your skin to be evaporated by the air to cool your body cannot cool your body because the sponge itself, imagine the air around you like a giant full sponge, it can't simply absorb any more. So that's, you end up with like this just oppressive heat and you just are sweating in areas. You walk out and you got this big weird sweat spot like where you're like just to the left of your belly button. You're like, I didn't even know that was part of my body. Dory was complaining about it 12 years ago.
Sometimes even here, it gets cold for a few days, and sometimes it gets hot for a few days. And you got one of two choices. You can be a whiny little puke like...
This was 12 years ago when we used to do the show on microfiche, apparently. I don't know what this... What is this?
Everybody I've been listening to for the last couple of... it's so hot. I can't sleep at night. It's miserable. It's so sticky. You know what? Go to Houston for a week.
You
want sticky? Go to Chicago.
Yeah.
Go to Baltimore. Go to the deep south.
Yeah. This is when Dory used to be able to send his listeners away.
You want hot? Go to Vegas. Go to Scottsdale. That's real heat. But here in the Puget Sound area...
That's when Dory used to have the squeaky chair.
We have elevated this weather wimpiness, quimbiness to an art form.
Yeah, it is... People do complain about it. And then he was... Then he did one last thing for Dory. Angry about TV news.
TV news.
Oh, my God.
I love watching that.
Quality.
You know, the inane banter between... Well, Jeff, you've certainly produced an uncomfortable day for us. Yes, because as the weatherman, I'm the wizard.
Oh, he's... that hurts. He's talking about Jeff Renner right there. Tom, that's Jeff Renner's taking shots at my J-man. Do you feel... Have you lived in other places where it's unbelievably hot, where people complain all the time? I mean, it is all relative.
Yeah, it's all relative. And no, not really. I am not. I prefer it, you know, the moderate temperatures. I've got a sister-in-law who, you know, grew up in California and just she's never adjusted to the northwest corner. I think since I was born here, I sort of feel like these are the ideals. I have been. I mean, the thing is, I've been in Paris, and Paris gets unbelievably hot, and it feels like New York.
Yes.
It's very urban. It's very packed. It's just so you know, like Paris in August
the smell of urine,
and the dog poop. No, they clean. Come on, Paris cleans its streets pretty well. They've got those guys in those green uniforms out sweeping. So I think it's not the stench. Now New York City, I have been in New York City in August when it's hotter and blazes, and that's. You know, that is tough. So I haven't lived there, but I've been there, you know, for like week on end, and it's it's tough. So I'm perfectly fine. I'm actually looking forward. I love hitting the record. I don't like it when it's that hot, but if it's going to be 97 or something, you might as well
break
hit 100. Exactly.
Right. Because then you can be like, well, then we at least have accomplished something.
Yeah.
To get up, just to, same thing, going back to the Edmonds Parade. We're not marching in it just to march in it. Listen, we're happy with the 4th of July. We love this country just as much as anyone else. And Edmonds is a great little town. But we're not in it just to be in it. We're in it to win the thing. Win it. Do you understand? I just spent $262 on costumes, okay? Plus the hundy that Nick Allen's going to throw out there to get us in the thing. So, Jacob,
John,
you better come through with drums.
We never... We need a car, I think.
We don't need a car, Tom.
I think that's how it constitutes.
You go around in a bus your entire life, and the one time you want a car is to be in a parade. You can walk it. You can walk it.
I don't know. I mean, I read those the rules and regulations, and I thought it was you had to pay $100 for every vehicle or something. And I don't know. Okay, well,
all right,
we'll
Jacob,
see.
Get on this. Jacob.
I'm in it to lose it. I don't care. I'll go.
Okay, you know what? I'll tell you what.
We're going to be disqualified.
No, you can't get in it. If you go in it with the attitude that I don't really care, you might as well be on the New Jersey Reds. You might as well be playing against the Harlem Globetrotters because that attitude is a losing attitude. I want people that want to win the thing. If you want to replace Tom and you're 43 long and you're willing to wear a very hot costume.
God. How did I get so lucky? Thank you, Jesus.
Hey, Tom.
I would also like to lodge that perhaps I'm not motivated enough.
Wait a minute. The whole thing's falling apart. What am I going to do with these costumes? That are, it's Amazon Prime. They're going to arrive in like 6 minutes. Wait a minute. Jacob, you're not in it either?
No, I'll.
That's not it. That doesn't say you want to win. You've got Rudy's attitude. When Rudy got in, was really, I'll. No, Rudy won it. Rudy sacked the guy. I think. I don't remember. But I'm pretty sure. Or Rocky got up off the mat and punched the guy in the throat. I don't know when somebody wants to. Jacob, you don't want to play it. Tom doesn't even care. And Sean?
I mean, I'm not about to take a bus to Edmonds. I was going to ask Jacob for a ride.
Never mind. Jacob's I'm getting on Amazon cool Prime, and I'm canceling the whole order. Fine. That's the spirit. I'm surprised we even won the Revolutionary War with that kind of attitude. Andrew Yang has given
you
up.
You all know I am a numbers guy. I'm someone who traffics in what's happening.
Traffics?
By the numbers. And I am not going to be the next mayor of New York City based upon the numbers that have come in tonight.
Same sort of give-up attitude that you guys both represent. NBC explains we like this story because in New York City, they have I don't know how many candidates altogether, and it's ranked choice. So here's my first choice, my second choice, my third, my fourth, my fifth choice, and then you then try to figure out who the top two guys are, and you do it through a series of ranking. This is, they're trying to explain it. Here it is, using pizza as an example.
So say you and your friends are trying to decide on a pizza topping, and it is the only topping you can.
By the way, Tom and I think Jacob as well, all think this would be a good idea to do in Seattle or in the state of Washington as well, that they would do rank voting. They're like,
eat for the next 4 years. Each of you will rank all options 1 through 5.
Pepperoni's one.
Pepperoni. Yeah. Same, pepperoni.
Chicken will be 2, and
I would say cheese 3rd. I mean, it's inevitable, but you can't have no cheese pizza.
Now, just because you can rank up to 5 doesn't mean you have to. If you only care about cheese, you can still just vote for cheese.
We always want the cheese, baby.
Or a pineapple.
Vote pineapple 5 times.
Just not like that. But if you do only vote for 1, know that you could get stuck with a topping you really don't like for 4 whole years. So, in this instance, pepperoni's the obvious favorite, right? But if it doesn't get more than 50% of votes, that's when you'll vote in rounds from the bottom up, which means the least popular topping has got to go.
And least favorite?
Pineapple.
Ooh.
I'm going to have to disagree with that one.
Number 2 or not, pineapple is now out of the picture, but everyone who ranked it as number 1 is still in the game. They'll just have their votes redistributed to whichever topping is ranked next on their list until one topping wins.
Now, when it comes to the race for mayor, by this point, you're probably wondering,
why am I voting for 5 people? We're supposed to end up with 1, right?
Correct. But the idea behind ranked choice voting for pizzas or for mayors is that even if you don't get your top choice pick, at least you'll get one you can live with.
Okay, so that ultimately ends up, as we talked about in the pre-show meeting, Tom, it stops sort of far-right, far-left candidates. It creates more of a sense of consensus by the voters.
That would be my guess. Now, there are only 20 counties that do this, so there's not a long history of that. But that would be my guess when I'm just trying to figure it out. That, in other words, there are elections. They mentioned AOC in New York, by the way. AOC managed to knock off a 4 or 5 or 20-year term congressman because something like 18% of the people bothered to vote, and then the people that were really behind her were very active, and so she knocked off this incumbent. If there had been, well, first off, you have to get people interested enough in voting to begin with. But if you had ranked voting where you could rank the ones, I think my guess is it would end up with a more moderate winner than the extremes. So that's why I'm kind of surprised that King County, Mayor Zahili has proposed that we do this in King County, and he thinks it will be more representative. And I don't know for a fact that it wouldn't be, but I would just think that it might be more problematic for more progressive in this city candidates to win if you have to get kind of a majority vote.
Well, I think
through
we do hear from that our King County member without that kind of weird backbeat here.
Ranked choice voting is the next step in the evolution of how we vote. It makes the process a lot more inclusive and makes your voice more important in the process. New York is going to give us a great, great test of how ranked choice voting works, because it's a high profile race. There are a lot of candidates in the field who are viable. And one thing that ranked choice voting did is all of the candidates have to go around and talk to everyone.
Are you concerned about it being kind of confusing for voters?
Not at all. Number one, on the voter side, it's super simple. You know, we're used to ranking things.
There you go.
Yeah. So that is one good point, that the candidates have to then respond. They don't have to just get their, you know, their one little slice of the pie. They're going to have to appeal to a broader coalition of voters, perhaps, because they realize how many of these people are going to vote me number one. Maybe mm-hmm. not that many. But, you know, a lot of these people might say, well, you know, he's OK. Yeah. And so it might sort of moderate the way you campaign and spread the wealth that way. So, yeah, I haven't decided one way or the other if this is a good idea or a bad idea. It's just my hunch about how things were happening. We might the ordinance will have to pass the full count, King County Council, and then it'll go to the voters in November if it gets that far.
I read an interesting piece the other day. Why do we act as if more voting, more people voting is better?
Well, I think it seems representative. If you have representative democracy and not enough people are represented, it feels like it's kind of a false choice. But I know that's a popular Republicans, because they've tended to be the minority party as opposed to the majority party in terms of numbers. With the Democrats, Republicans always say, no, we should only have, you know, people that are informed, that care enough to vote, vote. And that ends up favoring the elites sometimes. But
right. But we just make this general idea that if more people vote, then you have more of people's opinions. But really, it's not representative democracy.
If they're uninformed,
probably abortion would be more limited. Right. Because more people believe in more limited abortion. More gun laws would actually be more pervasive or less pervasive. If you really had the people's opinions, then you wouldn't have what you have right now. So
wait a minute. Yeah. I think gun control is more popular than the legislation. You'd think that there'd be fewer gun laws?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
Less people trying to restrict on this stuff. But anyway, and also the death penalty would be legal.
Wow, that's
generally, just polling, if you just say, well,
you think
that's
if more
the populist
people...
belief.
Yes.
Then that's the stuff that would be represented that way.
Oh, I think that's really interesting. No, usually the gun control issues are score really high, 75-80% sometimes, but the active minority that's represented by a very effective NRA lobbying ends up getting the minority opinion, the majority. So I think it's fascinating that you actually think it's the opposite. Because usually it's the people that care the most that have the biggest impact. Yeah. And that's what they always say. Conservatives that rally around the Second Amendment, they are much more passionate about that than the liberals, who may outnumber them 2-1, but it's not their core value. And so they end up losing legislatively. Oh. But
Tracy Taylor, by the way, the whole 4th of July thing fell apart. So I just had to cancel your costume as well.
Do you guys just want to come over to my house for a barbecue then?
Probably, Jacob. Probably. Does this?
Oh, he probably won't. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Boy, that was awkward. How about traffic?
Okay.
Here we go. All right, everybody. Let's go out there and buy a house. HUD aims to boost home ownership again for buyers with the high student loans. So, unfortunately, when you have yourself that one of the pieces we saw in the Wall Street Journal, Tom, the guy had $200,000 in student loans. And I was like, how can that be? But then you think about it. Let's say this person went to school for 4 years. It's $50,000 a year times four. Where's your $200,000? When it goes to apply for a loan, you have all of this debt. And the people that give mortgages assume to be able to service all of that debt. You're paying a certain amount of money, and there's no way you'd also be able to afford a house. So the government's stepping in and saying, here's what we're going to do for you. We will change the rules so that we don't stop you from being able to get a loan and make certain assumptions about your ability to service the amount of debt that you have.
Yeah, I guess without getting into details, at least at first, I think the general idea is that if you owe $200,000, I would guess a lot of medical students, for instance, who are going to make good money over the course of their lifetime, probably owe a ton of money. Same goes for anybody who goes to grad school, lawyers and all that. And yet they probably have good professional prospects. So if you are gauging how high, if you have $200,000 debt, mm-hmm. and it was garnered because you were working on your professional credentials, I would think the kind of a formula that they would use for FHA loans would be out of whack or unfair, because the prospects of them being able to pay that loan off, which is what mm-hmm. you have to decide, would be pretty good. Doctors, you know, are usually in need and make good money. And so that's just philosophically, I think that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It also, so the FHA, I was wondering the difference between the FHA and the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Is that the FHA is specifically for first-time and low-income right. home buyers. So
FHA,
that,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that really, that targets it. And so first-time home buyers with a lot of student debt, that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. One thing they did look at the calculations, they just have this kind of an arithmetic decision to decide how much they pay, and they were figuring out this guy who owed $200,000, they figured that his payment was really about $2,000 a month. Well, you can't afford, if you're paying that much money and you're not making that much money, you can't afford, you know, that high a payment for a house payment in addition to all of this. Well, it turns out the guy was really only paying $387, so that the calculation that they were using was off. And if they just make that calculation a little more realistic over the length of it, I think that makes perfect sense, and it's probably a good thing that this will happen. Yeah. Do you have concerns about this? Because I can see the danger. What we're all afraid of is that by encouraging home ownership and trying to make it economically feasible, that we'll relive the horror years of, was it 10, 15 years ago, whatever, that, you know, when everybody and his mother was buying a house and everybody and his mother couldn't afford the house, and we had that huge collapse.
Well, the Clinton administration came in, it was a Community Reinvestment Act, and they said we need more home ownership in black and Hispanic people that are making below a certain amount of money. So then they started this program, and then Fannie and Freddie got in there, and then they said, well, we'll back more of these loans. And then they put more and more pressure on these mortgage companies to lend to more and more people. And then they eventually got to a place where they said, listen, it was so ridiculous, no money down and no proof that you have a job. But we'll give you a house. And then all of it, of course, the bottom drops out. And when the bottom drops out, it just starts, and then everybody gets screwed by this. The idea of just trying to force from the government to being able to put pressure on banks to make loans to people that can't afford those loans because it's quote-unquote good for society doesn't serve society. The damage done by that, I mean, Alan Greenspan told them in 2002, we are in a lot of trouble because you have all sorts of debt out there and there's no way anybody could possibly pay for this stuff. And it's just, you know, you saw what happened, right? 08, 09, 10, 11, we went into a recession based upon the government and also banks taking advantage. Banks took advantage because the government said, good, will you loan it? Right, the big short.
Yeah.
The banks said, we'll loan to this person. They have absolutely no proof that they work. They have no money. And the government says, go ahead, loan it to them. We've got your back, right? And then the whole thing, derivatives get in there. It gets complicated and messy. And you end up crapping out the entire economy because you want to be able to create more homeowners.
But are you concerned? Do you think this HUD move risks the same thing? Because see, to me, it feels like a smart risk.
I'm okay with this because I think, right, I don't like when a bank just simply goes, well, like, for instance, if you ever apply for a small business loan, you have to present that banker with, this is what my plan is, this is how I'm going to build my money, this is how I can, and they look at it. I mean, they really study it. They just don't run it through an algorithm and kick it out the other side and say no. In this case, like you say, Tom, the guy was only paying $600 or $300 a month on the loan. Fine dandy, okay, fine, he's going to slowly pay it back. Then adjust the numbers so that this guy can get a house and get in there and be part of the community. Because I do believe ultimately home ownership is better than renting. Although we came across a story that the America would be better off if everybody was a world of renters.
Do you want to explain? I think you can do a better job than I can of the economics that the country, our economy would be more dynamic if none of us owned houses and we all rented? Can you explain
Look at all the flexibility that you have, because the house can only be sold when somebody wants to buy your house. You can put it on the market, but if you can't get what you need to get for it, you end up losing money, then you stay in the house. So you're stuck at the job and you're stuck in the house and you have no flexibility. But if everybody was renting, then, and by the way, big corporations are coming in and buying up huge tracts of houses and renting them back, because now you've got flexibility. Somebody can offer you a job, you could leave and leave that state, leave this town, go somewhere else, and you have a more fluid community and a more fluid dynamic marketplace where the person is not locked into an asset that basically has them with a ball and chain stuck in that one spot. They can't go somewhere else, take another job, make more money, get into a different school district. They're stuck, and they can't get out until the market allows them to get out.
How do you deal with the psychological uncertainty, though? The nice thing about owning a house, if you're lucky enough to be able to own a house, is
Tom, you and I, the two of us, we come from a different world where the house meant, well, you know what, I'm going to be there for 30
years, and
I'm gonna grow, and they're going to take a picture of the kids in front of the fireplace, and there's going to be the homecoming photo, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, we're moving out. But a lot of people, like Jacob, who obviously doesn't care much about the 4th of July parade in Edmonds, he might not want a house either, but it is built wealth.
Yeah, but exactly. But when you have a van by the river, who needs a home?
That, by the way, even that, that's what we should have in the parade. Jacob in that van.
Yeah, Jacob's van.
How about this? Let's do Jacob in the van, Sean with whatever his weapon is that he was going to use. He could have that. He could be flourishing that thing around, right?
Yeah.
And the two of us will be singing Sondheim songs.
Oh, wouldn't that be great on the back of my truck? There we go. We're back
afloat.
In. Who needs back by the way, I couldn't get my money back on the costume, so screw all of you. All of you. Actually, you, not you, Tracy Taylor. Not you. All right, look at traffic. All right, here we go. Give me a little of that mailman. We just shined a little of the mailman song. That'd be really. That's it. Oh, yeah.
I'm the mailman, as you can see, I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me, I'm the mailman, if you didn't know, I'm the mailman, I bring the mail to your door.
All right, guys. Teen Tangles right over there. Jacob, what do you think you might want to wear at the parade?
I own a lot of underwear.
All right, well, you can wear that if you'd like. All right, Teenie, she gave me the thumbs up, and she's enjoying one of those slushies, Tom, that have some sort of alcoholic beverage that brings everybody together in Edmonds. We'll get to the letter of the day, but first, let's take care of all the rest.
Okay, we talked about the news that at least tomorrow, officially, the Inslee is going to extend the eviction moratorium for a short bit. Area code 425. The extra tax dollars coming into the states to the tune of $2 billion should be given to the landlords and to the people that have not been able to pay rent, just like California's done. This would make everybody happy. Yeah, I think that's the idea. Or the ideal.
206, I hate to admit it, but I'm ashamed that my daughter and her boyfriend are one of those people who don't pay their rent, for a year. I think they owe $17,000 and bounced out of their apartment and debt. The kicker, his mother, helped them get a small mother-in-law until the standalone
unit.
Home.
That's a standalone.
Oh. Yeah, and they freaking bought it. What?
Yeah.
They're not great at buying reading, a place. I think there's words missing. Okay, keep going.
And area code 253, nobody's going to pay attorney fees just to spoil someone's credit. I assure you, I will not see a penny of the $30,000 owed me.
Wow. Holy moly. Hunter Biden's painting, 360, give me a break, saying buying Hunter's art would not buy influence with Papa Joe. The man is flying on Air Force One with Papa, and of course, it buys you influence.
Area code 206. I think John is just jealous that Hunter Biden's art career has taken off, and his watercolor art never did.
Swallowing that rage.
Oh, God. It hurt.
I'm now doing paint by numbers. Speaking of Tony, who's this guy?
Tony Benedetto. That's his real name.
Oh, this is a real show. Okay. Yeah. He had an art show in Reno, Nevada in the mid-80s. The art would arrive via a truck from San Francisco, but never showed up on time for the opening. I suggested Tony to make a sign saying, I left my art in San Francisco. He didn't think it was very funny. Oh, that's good.
I like it. Edmonds Parade Business, 360. Yeah. Mom, pick another float, please.
Mom, change the station.
Yeah, it's too late for that, lady. 253, go with the shortest shorts, patriotic shorts. That'd be good.
the High Society. Donna at the front desk. I can do float design, she offers.
Sure she can. 206 float idea, flatbed truck with a sofa on it with Tom perched on it, a replica, a curly shack on the other, complete with an outhouse, a mountain in the middle with Sean and Jacob sitting on top of the board.
Working the board. That's brilliant.
That is good.
Now somebody
okay, get on
it.
That, Donna.
Chris on Facebook says, yeah. Maybe John can get Dougie and his imaginary friend Fletcher in Edmonds on the 4th of July.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Oh, Fletcher.
Letter of the day mm-hmm. comes from area code 253.
Yeah.
If you like Charles Bronson and Death Wish 1 through yeah. Death Wish 37, you will love Sean in Bus Ride to Hell. He has a weapon. Right.
How many times did he mention the weapon?
I don't know.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write no more.
Didn't write no more.
Choice placement.
She left her bloomer hanging around my front door.